Hey there, this is Molly Christensen with the Building Heroes in Your Home podcast, where we learn to build heroes in your home and mine. And this is episode number 8. So in all the podcasts so far, I've been talking about the hero's journey, and I've been breaking it down and going into a little more detail about every little step or aspect of the hero's journey. And last time, we talked about mentors and how important those are on your journey. Now, a mentor, one thing a mentor needs to do is to create an environment of learning. And so that's what I want to talk about today, is creating that environment, because you need an environment in which you can grow. It's just like a garden. If you want to grow a nice garden, it's got to have the right environment. You can't just, you know, use like a paved road to plant a garden. You're going to want a place that's in the sun and has good soil and can get water and different aspects like that. But it's the same thing like that in our homes. And as a parent mentor, you need to have that environment in which the kids can grow. Now, as an adult, if you have an outside mentor, it's got to be the same thing. That mentor needs to make sure they create the environment in which you feel safe to grow. So some of the positives, some of the things you want to do to create a positive environment is to add things to it, such as, especially in a homeschool, you want to have it be resource rich. You want to have the resources there that they can use to learn. So for example, things like lots of books or audiobooks, craft supplies, things that they can use to create with. So now if you're a minimalist, you might be like, oh, I don't want to get all this stuff. Well, you can still make a resource-rich environment by taking the kids to the library, you know, things like that. The next thing that I think is super important creating an environment for your homeschool is to create... To surround the kids with ideas of greatness. And this can be in the form of physical reminders, such as quotes or books. Books are really good at this. Pictures, things like that. Just to be intentional about surrounding your kids with these ideas of their own greatness and their potential. It could also just be the culture in your home, where you practice being encouraging and reminding them that they're doing great, that they're good. And it could also be surrounding them with other people who can remind them of their greatness. So this is where you bring in the other mentors too, but that's just part of the environment. Then the next thing to create an environment in which to grow that is really important is to have boundaries. So if we go back to our garden analogy, you wouldn't just throw out seeds all over in your backyard without any boundaries, right? You'd want to say, okay, this is the garden area. This is where you grow. So in our own homes, we also have to have boundaries as well. They need to have these boundaries about what they can and cannot do in your home and what's right and wrong, those sort of boundaries. And this is also has to do with like character training. So another good analogy for this is, let's say you live on a busy road, but you have a bunch of little kids. Would you just let them go out and play in the front yard with no supervision and no fence? Of course not, because that would be dangerous. So the boundaries there are also to protect. So in our home, when we want to set up boundaries, we might let our kids go out and play in the front yard if we had a fence. And so that would be like the boundary. So in a non-physical way, we would want those boundaries set up so our kids do know what's right and wrong. And we put those rules up there too to keep them safe as well. So another aspect of creating a safe or an environment in which to grow is to create a culture or a feeling or however you want to say that, of judgment-free and shame-free environment where people aren't judging everybody else. Now, this sounds great, but it's not always 100% possible because that's what we tend to do as human beings. But we can do our best to not be judging our kids, not be shaming them, and to allow for failures and mistakes, and let them still know that they are good. Just because they messed up doesn't mean that they're a failure or that they're messed up. It just means they made a mistake and they can learn from it. So we definitely want to be aware of those things as we're setting up this environment to grow within our own home, especially if we want to take on this mentoring role. Now, another thing about the environment is that good mentors will move people to action. Because mentors aren't just like therapists helping you work through your problem, but rather what mentors do is move people to action so that they can move through their struggles more quickly and get to their goal, to their desired outcome much more quickly than they would otherwise. Because if they're just on their own, they're probably just wandering around and it's going to take them a little longer. And the reason why they're wandering around is because they don't know what action to take to get through the obstacle or the struggle. So that's why good mentors are super helpful, is because they can see what's on the other side of the struggle. In an upcoming podcast, we will talk more about how to get through obstacles. But not in this one. So I've been thinking about this too. It's like, okay, so good mentors move people to action, and this action isn't just to keep them busy, but it's rather is to move them forward. And often that forward movement is uncomfortable, and so they don't really want to do it. So that's why good mentors have to be encouraging too, because they know they can do it because the mentor themselves has done it. So how do they do that? How do they move people to action? So for young kids, I find that my main focus is not to get them to do everything that I want them to do, but rather I focus on character training, where I'm teaching them to obey, because obedience typically requires some action. So for the younger kids, that's the focus, is I focus on training for obedience and I can't think of the word, but when I say obedience, I don't just necessarily mean compliance all things. I'm not trying to make robots, but I am trying to teach my kids that when they choose to obey and do what is right, then their life's going to be simpler. And I don't force them to obey because I also want their hearts too. So for older teenagers, sometimes you still have to keep working on that character training, but, I don't mean older teenagers. Maybe I need to go back to the kids and the middle-agers. Middle-agers? I mean like the tweens. So the other part of obedience too is learning some discipline. So part of the hard part about being a human being is you want to do what you want to do. And it's just easier to do what your body says is comfortable. But sometimes we need to learn how to discipline ourselves and to do the things we don't really want to do, but we know we need to do because we know it's the right thing to do or it's the good thing to do for ourselves. For example, exercise, you know? So we can start working on the discipline thing like that too when they're, or I mean the self-discipline thing when for the younger kids. So as the kids grow up and become teenagers, then it's important for them to start moving to action there too on the things that they don't necessarily want to do either. So this still begs the question, how do you move people to action? So there's quite a few different ways here, and this is actually one of the reasons why homeschooling is so difficult for people, is because homeschool, nobody's telling you what to do as the mother. And this makes it really tough for the mom because in most cases, nobody's there following up on you. If you don't do anything this week, you're not going to be in trouble, except for you might feel guilty, you know, if you don't do anything for homeschool. And it's really difficult to teach your kids that discipline when you don't have that discipline yourself. And how do I know this? Oh, because I surely did not. I definitely had to learn that, where I was going to follow through and do what I said I was going to do. So the opposite of, maybe not the opposite, but what happens in the public schools, how do they get all their kids to do the work? Well, they have all sorts of systems in place, but a lot of times in homeschool, we don't even think about this. So it's easier in public school to get the kids to do stuff because you have deadlines, you have accountability, they have consequences, they have rewards if they don't do it. I know that sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wish my mom was here to nag me to do this, you know? But technically, I really don't wish that because obviously I didn't like it when she did in the first place, but the reason why I wish that is because I really just wanted some accountability, I think, because I couldn't discipline myself to do stuff. So what we need to do in the environment in our homes is to create, if you want people to act, then there has to be some urgency or some scarcity. Now, I'm all for abundant thinking, but sometimes that this scarcity idea can really work along with urgency. So when you're trying to move kids to action on schoolwork, you can require it all, and you can put in consequences, like if they don't get it done by Friday, then they don't get something, or they have, I don't know. But the problem is I don't like to require schoolwork because then they're just going to do the minimum to get out of it. And I'm wanting them to be able to think and ponder on some of these things that they are choosing to do. So there's a really fine balance between requiring and moving people to action and getting them to do things. So one of the best ways to start off with moving people to action is to really, really focus on belief. And what I mean by that is, if somebody believes they can do something and they get excited about it, they will totally take off and do it on their own. If they don't believe they can do something, they'll be stuck. So now this is part of the problem, is when we start trying to pound these lessons into our kids, if they hit a wall, they may get discouraged and can't keep moving forward. And so they start to believe they can't do it. And this happens a lot in subjects like math. So if your kid has been working through the math and it gets hard, what they do in a public school is the whole class just keeps moving ahead. But if that kid gets lost at that one spot, they may think, I can't do this. I'm completely lost. I can never learn math now. And that's probably happened to a lot of us as adults. Looking back, we're like, that's why I hate math, is because I got left behind and I didn't know what to do. So the deadline didn't actually work there because they started learning believing that they couldn't do it. So in homeschool, what we can do is hold that belief that they can learn it. And then when the kids do hit a wall, we say, that's okay. We can take a break and then come back to it later, because I know you'll get it when you're ready. And I don't know that we always get that message anywhere else. So start off with creating the belief that they can do it, and just always encouraging them, because that's so helpful. So the next part is there's this scarcity and urgency thing that really helps people move to action. So if there's no deadline, let's say you want to write a book. Without a deadline, it's going to be really hard to do. And so, but how do you do that without requiring it of the kids? Now, for older teens, sometimes you do just require it because they need to learn to submit to it. But for the younger kids, I don't necessarily want to make them do stuff, but I want to inspire them to do stuff and believe that they can do it. So sometimes what I will do is I will offer the kids a challenge, and I will say, hey, if you do this, this, and this, by this date, then you can earn this. Now, this is a external reward thing, but I don't use an external reward so that they start feeling entitled to it. Does that make sense? So with a challenge, I'll just issue challenges here and there for things that I think maybe they can do because I want to give them that feeling of urgency. Say, if you do this now, because I think you're ready, I think you could do it, I'm giving them belief, then you could earn this reward. And but the other part of that is I don't make them do it. I just offer it to them. So, for example, I offered my 10-year-old son a challenge to work on his math books of Life of Fred. And I didn't make him do it. But I told him he would earn money after the end of each book. And so I think I said, the first book, you'll earn $1 for. And this is the Apples book, which is actually a really easy book. I actually started him at a lot lower level than he actually is, because then it's it gives him more of the belief that he can do it because it's easy for him, right? So then as he starts working through it, he'll find them getting a little harder. But here he has the belief that he can do it. So I paid him $1 for the first book, $2 for the second book, $3 for the third. Well, I'll tell you, he didn't do it at first because he's like, oh, it's only $1. And we're like, okay. But remember, if you get up to book 9, that's a lot of money. And so he starts working through them. And by the time he starts getting to book 4 or 5, he's just like, wait, this is a good deal. And so he started working really hard on me. He's going super fast through all these math books because he had this urgency to do it. Now, this actually brings me to another way to create urgency or scarcity to help people move to action. Now, by me creating urgency or scarcity, I'm not being mean because I'm not making them do this. They always have the choice. And they know that if they don't do it, it's okay because I'm not going to get on them. So now I told you that with this challenges, I'm paying them money. Now I know a lot of people wonder, well, how do you even afford that? Well, first off, I don't do challenges all the time. But second off, I did another thing. I created some scarcity in my kid's life. It's interesting in this day and age because most people, or kids anyway, in this day and age, do not need anything. They have no needs. Like, because all their needs and wants are taken care of for the most part. What I did, and I actually didn't even realize this was what I was doing when we first did it, but in our family, I had read this book who mentioned this idea, and I can't remember the name of the book right now, but in it, they said that they had their kids buy their own clothing from the time they were 8. Oh, it's written by Linda and Richard Iyer, and it's called Teaching Your Children Responsibility. That's what it was. Anyway, so when they're 8, they're going to have their kids buy their own clothes. I thought, ah, sounds like a great idea. Of course, I didn't have an 8-year-old at the time. So when my eldest got to be 8, that's what we did. We decided he's going to have to buy his own clothes. Now, how does an 8-year-old possibly do that? Well, you'd be surprised. he could work for me to earn money, and we would also shop at cheaper places like our thrift store and stuff, and I'd look for deals for him too, but he could totally do it, and he actually got really creative in how he earned his money. He became entrepreneurial. He had to be a problem solver. So when we did that, though, what we did is we created a need, and they needed to buy clothes. Our kids did. And so because they had a need, they had some motivation. So some people are like, well, okay, I mentioned this already, but they wonder, how do you afford paying for challenges, and why are your kids so motivated by money? And this is why. I could afford paying for the challenges because I don't have to buy their clothes. I just budgeted that money into a challenge fund or a work fund if they wanted to work for money. So that's how I had them budget for that. And then, what was the other part of that? Okay, so then they would, why were they so motivated for money? It's because they had some needs. And they also have wants too, but they had to make sure that their needs were fulfilled before buying their wants. So that is another way to create scarcity or urgency to move people to action. Another way is to hold classes or to enroll in classes. So it's a lot easier to stay consistent on track when you're meeting with other people. And so sometimes I will just hold classes in my home where I'll teach them, mainly just so that the kids have accountability, so they'll keep moving forward, and it also gives the positive peer pressure. Or sometimes I'll just enroll my kids in classes, and that helps them stay on target and move to action. The other one, too, I think I mentioned this one already, is deadlines. But so just kind of to summarize, how do good mentors move people to action? How do you move your kids to action when you're not trying to require them to do everything? Because when you require, you get into power struggles, which is not fun. That sucks the energy and life out of you when you get into too many power struggles by trying to make your kids do schoolwork. But this is the way you move them to action is, number one, you build that belief and you keep doing that through everything else. And then number two, you got to learn to be consistent. So as you're consistent in homeschooling them, then they're going to learn to be more consistent as well. Some more easily than others. And then number three is to do character training with the kids. Teach them to be self-disciplined and obedient. And then number four would be to create that scarcity and urgency that will help them move to action. So I do that through having deadlines and classes and doing challenges that I don't make them do. And then also by creating needs in their life. When they have needs, then they have to become more creative in problem solving and moving to action as well. So that's just some of my thoughts today on creating an environment of growth in your home and how you would go about doing that. And I guess one more, too, I probably should have added was moving people to action was sometimes having a plan. But we can get into that again later. So anyway, hopefully that gave you some food for thought about some things you can do in your home to create this environment for growth. And I would love to hear more from you guys how you're doing this. How are you creating an environment in which to grow? Because these were just some of my thoughts that I've had over the years. But I'm sure there's plenty of other great ways to do this as well. So reach out to me. Let me know what you think. And we will... And thank you for listening to this podcast. And we'll talk to you later.